7:08 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Kat Brooks.
And I'm Brian Edwards Tegart. You sure about that, Kat Brooks?
I forgot who I was for a second.
We're going to start ticking off a daily segment that seems merited by the circumstances that we're calling Impeachment Watch. We haven't come up with a sonic cue or a sting or theme music yet, but want to take a look at a different angle of what's unfolding in Washington right now each day. And start today with the actual laws and practices of whistleblowing and whistleblower protections in Washington, D.C. Here's what we know about the person who started the saga that has resulted in the fourth opening of impeachment inquiries against the President of the United States in the history of the Republic. According to reporting by the New York Times, and it was controversial that they revealed this, the person who filed the whistleblower complaint at the center of this was a CIA officer who was stationed at the White House on July 27th when President Trump placed his call to newly elected Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. We know that that person is now in federal witness protection, according to their lawyers, because of a series of veiled threats made by Mr. Trump and his supporters. To wit, on Thursday, President Trump was speaking to staff members for the U.S. mission at the United Nations and said, quote, "I want to know who's the person who gave the whistleblower the information, because that's close to a spy." End quote. "You know what we used to do in the old days when we were smart with spies and treason, right? We used to handle it a little differently than we do now." On that same day, two of Mr. Trump's supporters issued a $50,000 bounty for information that would shed light on the identity of the whistleblower. And that brings us to where we are now. Of course, a lot of people who have tried to get information public about what they perceive as misdeeds of government have not gone the formal whistleblower protection route, most notably Ed Snowden, said it's not a tremendously good process when you're required to report on your boss's activities to your boss. We're joined now by someone who is much more acquainted with this area of law than we are. David Colapinto is the founder and general counsel for the National Whistleblower Center, which provides legal assistance to whistleblowers. He's based in Washington. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you start by walking us through the process that the CIA whistleblower took? It didn't actually start with a whistleblower complaint, but an informal complaint?
Yeah, according it's the New York Times reporter reporting that we have as the source for this information, which is that the whistleblower, presumably, according to the New York Times, worked at the CIA and decided that this person decided they didn't want to go directly. That this person had another employee at the CIA bring the concern to the general counsel of the CIA. And then the CIA general counsel went to the White House with the concern. The whistleblower, according to the story, used to work at the White House and began to hear from former colleagues who were still at the White House. That's how the whistleblower found out that the CIA was in communication with the White House, and the White House lawyers started questioning people on the White House staff about the source of this information. So the whistleblower became concerned and then decided to escalate it and utilize formal whistleblower processes and asked that this concern be transmitted to Congress.
So what does that formal whistleblower process look like for someone in an intelligence agency?
You need permission to go outside the community with concerns. You can blow the whistle internally to your supervisor, to management, to the inspector general. You can go to those kinds of places with concerns. And when I say concerns, this would be concerns that there was a violation of any federal law, rule, or regulation, abuse of authority, and so forth. So without getting the approval of the agency, whether or not it's deemed an urgent concern, you're not going to get outside to the intelligence communities intelligence committees of Congress. So that's a huge problem. You really are at the mercy of the intelligence community bureaucracy. And it's almost by chance that this complaint was actually reviewed, got in the hands of the inspector general, who agreed it was an urgent concern under the statute. But even there, the system broke down because the complaint wasn't transmitted to Congress. That got bottled up again, and when it went to the Director of National Intelligence to send it to Congress, that person then went to the DNI went to the Justice Department and the White House again.
This is Joseph McGuire. He testified before the House Intelligence Committee last week. I guess the question this raises is what you're describing is a sequence of events that could just as easily have buried this complaint as turned it into the cause of impeachment. Why does anybody go formal whistleblower route if there's that much vulnerability?
Well, the disclosure part of a whistleblower case is supposed to be the easy part. And you can see how difficult it was for this whistleblower to get urgent concerns to Congress. The Justice Department and the White House came up with all types of reasons why that whistleblower complaint should not go to Congress under that statute. And so you're right. I think that's what it does look like. There was an effort to bury this. It was getting buried the first attempt, if you believe the New York Times story, by the CIA General Counsel and the White House. Then the second attempt, the formal whistleblower complaint, almost got buried when the Justice Department told the DNI that it wasn't an urgent concern. That's the first phase. The second phase is if you suffer retaliation, there is a new law on the books since 2014, which was passed by Congress after Snowden made his disclosures, that has set up an internal procedure. I would compare it more to a star chamber proceeding than a fair adjudication of a whistleblower complaint of retaliation. But we're not at that phase yet. The campaign of harassment and retaliation is underway, but we don't know if this whistleblower has yet filed a complaint claiming retaliation. But if it were to go that route, it will be a very difficult road for the whistleblower. This case is really a test of whether or not the intelligence community can effectively implement whistleblower protections as passed by Congress. And we'll see.
I guess I wonder what happens in addition or separate from the second phase that you were just talking about. What role does the whistleblower play in this impeachment inquiry moving forward? Brian mentioned he's in protective custody. They are in protective custody. At some point, will their identity be revealed? Like, what is their role now?
Yeah, I don't know if the whistleblower is in protective custody, but there have been, given the level of threats and the overt admission by the White House and the president that they are looking to unmask the identity of this whistleblower before the whistleblower is ready to come public, is extremely disturbing and does put the whistleblower at risk, not just professionally, but risk of bodily harm in this environment. And the role that the whistleblower will play in the impeachment proceedings is, other than being a witness, right now all we know is that the whistleblower is likely to be a witness to the House Intelligence Committee, who has stated that they intend to interview this whistleblower. Whether or not the whistleblower will be needed down the road, or whether Congress builds its case for oversight and impeachment through other witnesses is unknown. And it's too early to say. But obviously, the whistleblower triggered the process.
Finally, Div Colapinto, I'd like to speak in general about whistleblowers like the ones you work with, what motivates them. My understanding is that in other areas of government, if you're blowing the whistle on waste or fraud, the law lets you recover some of the money you wind up saving the government. So that's a clear incentive. But people coming out of intelligence agencies who've played the role of whistleblower, I'm thinking of Thomas Drink at the National Security Agency some years ago, they've made pretty substantial charges that they've faced, you know, life-altering retaliation. Well, why does someone like this stick their neck out in the first place?
Right. And I think across the board, generally, it is a concern that there is a violation of law or some sort of misconduct or fraud going on that's going to harm the public or harm taxpayers or harm investors. You're right, there are a lot of laws that cover private sector employees that provide for financial rewards. For example, government contractors, if they're ripping off the government under the False Claims Act, or if you work in a publicly traded company and you see securities fraud, you can file an anonymous complaint with the Securities and Exchange Commission and be eligible for a financial award if the government recovers money. There's also a similar major tax fraud statute that will allow people to confidentially blow the whistle on wealthy tax cheats. But for federal employees generally, and for particularly intelligence community employees, the protections are limited. For intelligence community employees, you have a very narrow set of rules that you can follow, or you can go outside and risk what has happened to others. And any time people have tried to go outside the system, and when some of these cases came forward, there really wasn't much of a system to go outside of. So if you wanted to bring your concerns forward, you by definition were going to be labeled as a criminal, and these people get charged under the Espionage Act. And there have been multiple cases, starting with Daniel Ellsberg, who was the most famous leaker of the Pentagon Papers, right up to the present time. The Tom Drake case is a great example. Reality Winner is another example. Ed Snowden, obviously, and there have been others. But why I say this is a real test is that in justifying the Espionage Act prosecutions, the war on whistleblowers, if you will, the government has always said, well, these people didn't follow the rules, so they're not real whistleblowers. Well, now we have an intelligence community whistleblower who has followed the rules. There's no dispute about that. And what do we hear the president and his supporters saying? Oh, this person isn't a real whistleblower. And implying that the whistleblower who has followed the rules should be treated in a similar fashion as the whistleblowers who were charged with crimes under the Espionage Act. So that's why this is going to be a real test of the system. What motivates these folks is their duty to protect. They swear an oath to the Constitution and to uphold the laws of the United States. They take it seriously. If they see misconduct or fraud, they want to do the right thing. That's all they ask.
All right. David Colapinto, thank you so much for speaking to us this morning.
All right. Thank you.
David Colapinto is one of the founders and also the general counsel for the National Whistleblower Center. It's a nonprofit that provides legal assistance to whistleblowers. They're based in Washington, D.C. And again, we're going to try to cover a different aspect of the impeachment saga unfolding in Washington, D.C. every morning at this time.